The Big Picture, a Christian insight into the world of movies, television and pop culture with magazine editor Ben McKechin and scriptwriter Mark Hadley. A Bible Society Australia production, sharing the light of God's Word into every corner of your world.
G'day sport, I'm Ben McKechin.
And I'm his yoga instructor, Mark Hadley. Welcome to episode 38 of The Big Picture for the week beginning November 15. And our second week on air.
Mate, they cannot stop us.
Despite the injunctions.
They probably could stop us, yeah.
This week, scouts, zombies, the apocalypse and badgers on the big screen and in real life.
And in real life?
And well, we'll see.
But then back on the big screen also this week, Julia Roberts and Nicole Kidman, they lead a Hollywood remake of an Oscar-winning drama about the personal cost of solving crime.
We also jog into the sporting life, checking out a new movie about Lance Armstrong, as well as the top five sports that movies made me want to try, and I probably really shouldn't have. Yes, cutting edge news.
The latest in news as signified by our cutting edge special effects. Now, the big news this week at cinemas is, Mark, you know what the answer is, surely. The Hunger Games, Mockingjay, Part 2.
I put it right out of my mind, but please remind me.
Oh, mate, not, unlike loads of people out there, it's the finale to one of the biggest franchises around. Preview screenings have been really thin on the ground, been under lock and key.
It's
even
true,
people
actually,
like
yeah.
us haven't been invited to them yet.
I'm personally insulted
Incredible.
That no one sent me a free ticket.
But by next week's show, we will have seen it and we'll be telling you all about it. So stay tuned for more on The Hunger Games, Mockingjay, Part 2.
And also, Tuesday this week on ABC One, Inside Australia's Failed World Cup bid. Now, I'm not sure if you actually are a soccer fan. There are huge numbers of us out there, but this documentary is going to be really interesting for you because it basically reveals how Frank Lowry, one of Australia's most powerful billionaires, got played in the dirty game of world football. So if you're interested in soccer, you'll be interested in this. Tune in Tuesday on the ABC.
Mark, like the sun rises every day, I think it was just expected that an even longer version of the Hobbit movies was going to come out at some point.
It was predictable.
Like the Lord of the Rings trilogy.
It was prophesied.
That there was going to be some extended version. Well, on DVD and Blu-ray, the Hobbit trilogy extended edition comes out, which I think by my tally would probably put it at, you might have to spend, say, 23 hours of your life, I think, watching those three movies. Maybe that's a rough guess. You're going to get 9 discs in the Blu-ray set and 15 discs in a DVD set. So I think as much as watching the movies, there's all these extras, it's probably like 3 years worth of extras. If you're a Hobbit fan, in short, you are going to go crazy for it.
One of the deleted scenes is actually Gandalf and Bilbo playing Uno.
For 4 days.
While they're in the Mirkwood Forest. I believe it's a reverse on you, Bilbo. Okay, well, on Wednesday at 8:30 on 7 p.m, Blindspot launches. Now, this is a US series. It's got a fair bit of buzz, and it focuses on a mysterious tattooed woman who's lost her memory and doesn't know her own identity, but the FBI discovers that each of the tattoos contained on all over her body contain a clue to a crime that they've got to solve.
In news this week that's caught our attention, it seems that Walt Disney, had a rabbit in mind before it actually went with Mickey Mouse. There's been some digging going on in the British Film Institute's National Archives as someone turned up a long-lost Disney animation that stars Oswald the Lucky Rabbit. From a 1928 feature called Sleigh Bells, Oswald the Lucky Rabbit was a precursor to Mickey Mouse, but I think on basis Oswald versus Mickey, I think they did the right thing.
Really?
I know. Bugs Bunny. But okay. Sleigh Bells is going to come out in London in December. I reckon it'll be around the world thereafter.
Well, in real news this week, for all the Trekkies out there, some fantastic information. This week, CBS has announced that it will premiere a new Star Trek series. It's such a win that CEO Leslie Moonves likened Star Trek to the family jewels, stating that fans were some of the most passionate in the world, and they have a right to be so, I might add.
Okay.
Kirk, that's Man or Picard?
Mate, let's move on from this week to
Stupid
what's on at
Janeway.
Cinemas this week. Can we just move on with the show? Oh, so we're up to what your kids are watching. What are they watching this week, Mark?
Aiming for the box office dollars of teen boys everywhere, a new movie throws a trio of scouts into a battle with a zombie plague.
Of course.
Clearly. A zombie plague. We're clear on that. We've got the premise. Okay. Harking back to rude and over-the-top movies from the 80s, The Scout's Guide to the Zombie Apocalypse is chockers with violence, swearing, and sexual content of the graphic variety, which we should point out we're not actually recommending this film at this point, but listen closely. We've put it in as our What Your Kids Are Watching segment this week because, let's face it, plenty of our young adults will be checking this out. Be afraid that they might actually go along to it or take this chance to encourage viewing of a thoughtful kind.
There comes a time in every teenage boy's life.
Tonight's the secret party. This could be the night of our lives.
When he begins testing his limits.
Catch!
Ow.
I said catch!
Exploring his freedoms.
Extra large. Really?
And the most difficult of all.
Whoa.
Talking to girls.
Costume party?
No.
I'm a scout.
Like an actual scout?
Yeah.
So, Ben, the Scout's Guide to the Zombie Apocalypse. What is this about?
Mark, it's about scouts versus zombies in an apocalyptic scenario.
I have a follow-up question for you. Is this a stupid waste of time?
Yes and no.
I'm interested in the no.
Yeah, yeah. So the no is, I think it plays very well to its audience. I went to a preview screening where there were some guys sitting next to me. They were in their, late teens, early 20s. They laughed like they'd never seen a movie before. The yes, is it a stupid waste of time, is mainly down to, you've seen it all before. It doesn't play on its central idea well enough, as in having scouts versus zombies.
It doesn't actually make much of the scout?
They didn't use that notion anywhere near as much as I thought they would have, even to make jokes about. I didn't think they did. But one of the big waste of time elements of this film is there is so much obscenity in it, and there's also loads of violence as well. So you get heaps of zombie headshots, and you get a lot of smutty jokes. And there's a couple of scenes, a little bit like a movie called Spy that we saw earlier in the year, where for a comedy that was actually pretty funny on that occasion.
Yeah, that was really good.
It went to some really gross out points that I think would just push the bounds of unnecessary. All they're doing is for shock tactics alone, and that happens here in Scout's Guide, where you might be a little bit concerned about some of the content in it.
Okay, well, it sounds like there's a lot of offensive content in it. You've got to be careful. How can you talk to your kids about something like this?
Openly and honestly, Mark.
Children, gather round.
As opposed to just saying blanket ban, don't go see Scout's Guide. Now, as you said earlier on, we're not necessarily recommending this. It's not that great a movie to recommend for your teen, your
but
older kids to go see.
But it is going to be a teen magnet.
But it is going to be a teen magnet. That's right. And the title alone, I think, is going to drag some people in. So instead of saying don't go see this, I talk more about why are they going to see it. Like, is there nothing else on at the cinema that you can go and see? And let alone that, just what do you think is going to be in this movie? What have you heard about it? What kind of impact do you think it's going to have? And also, what's it encouraging you to do? Now, this is a movie that features everyone from strippers to scout mistresses and old ladies down the street. So you've got all this kind of variety of women on screen, but there's a lot of emphasis placed on strippers and nudity in this film. So if you're a teen boy, are you going to watch this movie because you're looking for a rollicking adventure, or are you going just because you want to lust on the screen? And that's a big question, I think, that parents will want to talk to their kids about. I don't know if the kids are going to fess up about it.
No, but you're right, because this is actually an opportunity to be way open about the conversation of, you should be thinking about what you're watching.
Yeah, you could do that.
You couldn't. This is a gimme.
Yeah.
It's a softball.
Yeah.
Kids,
and I think there's probably one deeper element in the movie that you can drag out of it. So it's all about dorks versus the undead. But
sorry. Did you just liken dorks and scouts?
Mate, I believe
later
I did.
In the program, we will introduce you to three very deadly scouts who will probably go against that.
Yeah,
they
might have something to say
please.
To me. But in the undercurrent of this film, there's a slight ode to friendship, that among all the smut and the headshots and the familiarity that's going on in this film, there's something to be said for the central trio and what they go through as teens and facing peer pressure, et cetera, what they do in the course of their long-lasting friendship. I think there's something to be said for that, and particularly as a Christian, and you want to emphasize the characteristics of people and being loving others and looking out for others first and putting other people first, etc. You get elements of that in here.
But it's usually not enough to justify a ticket.
No, it's usually crushed by the excess and the corny speeches and the usual stuff that you get in these movies. So I'm just saying it's in there, but it's very faint.
Okay. Well, Scout's Guide to the Zombie Apocalypse is now showing and is rightly rated MA 15+ for strong comedic horror, violence, and nudity. Even though it was meant to be funny, the violence is pretty forceful and steady, not to mention the frank sex scenes. This scouting guide stars Ty Sheridan, Logan Miller, Sarah Dumont, and wait for it, Patrick Schwarzenegger. Yes, the Governator actually has a son. The Terminator is launched his own son's movie career with Patrick Arnold Shriver Schwarzenegger making his appearance in this film.
Now, where can we go from there, Mark, apart from asking and trying to answer the one question that we haven't actually answered yet, which is, what would real scouts and their leaders do if zombies attack?
Stay tuned.
Welcome back. Now, you've heard what Hollywood thinks scouts would do when confronted by the living dead, but let's get real for a minute. When the zombie apocalypse does arrive and we know it's going to arrive. It's most certainly going to show up.
Of course it is.
Because I'm sure The Walking Dead, World War Z, 28 Days Later, Night of the Living Dead, none of them have lied to us.
No. Why? How could we have so many films and not have a zombie apocalypse?
That's right. So when it does arrive, is seeking out your local Arcala the safest thing to do? Well, we sent Mark off for a secret meeting this week with Real Scouts for our press record segment to see what their training would do for them in the face of a grave mission.
Okay, well, I'm standing here with three bona fide scouts, members of the scouting movement who have between them probably decades of scouting experience. Now, for legal reasons, we can't actually use their real names because they'll probably reflect on the scouting movement itself. And also, they're going to reveal certain scouting secrets, things that can't be known to the general public without years and years of dibbing and dobbing. Let me begin by saying, look, guys, what is your current scouting position?
We probably have collectively as a family a century worth of scouting experience behind us.
Wow, yeah. So you're a scouting family.
It started with Dad and his siblings, I believe.
And his dad
as well, yeah.
Now, you're the youngest, so where did you start?
I started in Joey's.
Joey's, okay. And where do you go from Joey's?
You go up to Cubs and then Scouts and then Venturers, then either Rovers, or if you feel like you're brave enough, you can become a leader.
We're actually examining a film called The Scout's Guide to the Zombie Apocalypse, which has many, many things wrong to it, which we've discussed in our last break. But let's take it seriously just for a moment. Are scouts ready for the zombie apocalypse, do you think?
Absolutely not.
Yes! I mean, our motto is be prepared, so we've got to be prepared for whatever comes along. And if it's a zombie apocalypse, well, it's a zombie apocalypse. We're prepared.
Right. Well, I'm going to test your readiness to deal with the zombie apocalypse with some standard questions generated by the film itself. Now, you find yourself walking along a trail, a lovely sort of mountain trail, and you're confronted by a zombie deer. Okay, what is a scout's reaction to a zombie deer?
What's that doing in Australia? That's a feral animal and we should shoot it.
Is it, you know, one of those fast zombies or is it a slow zombie? If it's a slow zombie, well then maybe you just outrun it. But if it's a fast zombie, then I'd be heading for a tree.
In the event of rescuing somebody from the zombie apocalypse, said person's handbag breaks and needs to have the two ends tied together. What knot do you use?
Reef knot.
No.
Scouts. Double fisherman's.
It depends. If you're a scout, you'll use a really good fancy knot. If you're a venturer, you'll use a couple of cable ties.
Okay. Right, so as scouting moves on, you actually drop some of the frippery and become more and more practical.
Exactly.
Or
yes.
More you drop the traditionalism and adopt the new technology.
No, you turn into a teenager and you become lazy. So basically, if it can't be done with duct tape, cable ties or WD-40, it's not worth doing.
Back to the movie. Let's say that you are trapped in a basement with your scout leader who has become a zombie. How do you treat a fellow scout who's become a zombie?
The scout leader's likely to be overweight, so I'll just outrun him.
In this case, that was pretty true, actually, with the film. Yeah, that was a good call.
I'd be more concerned about the scout leader eating themselves than coming after me.
If you're in the basement, you could probably throw him in the boiler.
What would you do if zombies attack while you're hiding in a police station?
Call 000.
Yeah, that's good. I suppose you could just yell out 000, couldn't you? Because they're probably there. But okay, any other ideas?
I'd be looking at locking myself in one of the cells.
Right, okay, so you're actually right on the path of the film. There's a little bit of a problem with that, and that is that once you've locked yourself in a cell and realise you don't have the key, what next? A cheery round the fire sing-along?
I've got a pocket knife. Surely I can cut into the ducting that's running over the roof of the cell.
Is a woggle really going to be any use in a zombie apocalypse?
Oh, it depends how heavy it is. Some of them get pretty heavy. Tie a rope to it. You've got a bit of a mace happening.
Okay.
Shark's tooth one, that would be useful.
Here's the last one. You as a scout are facing the final horde of the zombie apocalypse and you find yourself in something approximating a Bunnings. You're going to manufacture your own scout-oriented weapons to defeat the zombie horde. What's your attack?
I'd be going the ride-on mower. We use them to keep the grounds tidy at the scout hall.
And there's nothing like a tidy layer of zombies spread and mulched.
Mallet would be good. Whack them over the head.
I'd be going for the insecticide section and just putting them all together and spraying the zombies.
Cha-ching, you win the prize. That's basically what happens in the film for at least one. Well done.
The That time of the show, we're up to our first now showing pick for the week. There's an Argentinian book that became an Academy Award-winning film in 2010, and it's now been transformed into a Hollywood remake full of household names. And this is actually one of the only films that is game enough to go out at cinemas this week against the finale of the Hunger Games series. This is Secret in Their Eyes. It stars Julia Roberts and Nicole Kidman as a tight-knit investigative team torn apart by the murder of one of their teenage daughters. It's every parent's nightmare situation, and it brings about a cinematic study of our need for justice and the failure of revenge.
I found him.
How did you find him?
Online. 696,000 Caucasian males in the U.S. prison system. You can cycle through the entire population in a year if you look at 1,906 faces every night, so I did.
For a year?
For 13 years. Reopen a case.
We've had multiple leads. They've all been false alarms. Len just dies a little bit every single time. I don't have the stomach to watch him walk away again. Maybe we go about this a little less officially.
No.
Ray. Justice. I owe my daughter that.
Oh, sorry, Kim, Nick, whoever it was.
Julia, whoever
Julia,
you are.
Someone just sent something.
Household name?
This is a story about a rising team of investigators, kind of the beginning of their career. So you've got Chiwetel Ejiofor.
He was in 12 Years a Slave.
Yeah, yeah. And so basically he plays an FBI agent at the beginning of his career. And then you've got Julia Roberts, who is playing an investigator as well. And you've got Nicole Kidman, who's a sort of a paralegal person just starting off her legal career as well. And they come across a crime which suddenly involves them at a very personal level, because Julia Roberts, as the mother, suddenly discovers that the person who has been raped and murdered is her daughter. It's actually, the film bats between the past and the future. So we're still living in the future, because what's happened is the FBI investigator, the African-American fellow, has discovered that he can now put a finger on where the location of the guy who's the murderer, and can they get the crime to go forward? And every time they think about it, the details of the crime in the present, we flash back to the past to sort of pick up how they got to that point. Do you remember Prisoners with Hugh Jackman?
And Jake Gyllenhaal from a couple of years ago.
Yeah, so 2013. Yeah, so that was basically about a kidnapping and parents desperate to find their children, right? Okay. But actually, it was really about the horror of what happens to a parent and what they're prepared to do and how they struggle.
The extent of grief and like your moral choices that you
and
make
this
around
is exactly what
searching
this is
out
film.
For justice.
Yeah, this film is very much like that. So Secret in Their Eyes is really about the damage done to people over the whole period of their career, always looking back to this one failure of justice and how justice didn't deliver. In particular, Julia Roberts is probably going to get an Academy Award nomination for this.
Yeah?
Yeah, her performance is incredible, because just visually, she gives you, like jumping between past and present, she gives you a picture of what 13 years of unresolved grief does to a person. Visually, it's incredible. She does an amazing job.
So you're saying it's going to be award-winning. It's got already Oscar winners and Oscar nominees in it. But it's coming out in the week when The Hunger Games is on screens. Like, do you think people are going to show up? Is it actually going to be a hit with Australian audiences?
Look, I don't think it's going to be a hit with Australian audiences. Not because it's not a good film, but for the same reason it's not going to be a hit with many audiences in the West, whether they're European or American. Because the end of the film is very much about what it is like to struggle when our ideals for justice and things don't measure up. You see, there's nothing neat about it. It's not like the bad guy gets caught. Well, I don't want to give too much away. It's not like there's a neat pat ending where we can all feel like, yes, the good guy's won and the bad guy got his. In this case, the bad guy does get his. Okay, but in one respect, it's just not satisfying. And that is the lesson of the plot. The last 25 years or so, I've spent a significant proportion of that as a journalist. And in that time, I spent 5 years as a court reporter. And I can tell you without a doubt that nothing a judge ever said, however much longed for the sentence was by the family or something like that, nothing a judge has ever said has put people back together again. You know, time and time again, I've seen people stand on court steps, film them, interview them afterwards, and they've said, we're very happy with the outcome. But generally speaking, you see broken people. And the reason why is because justice can only really hold accountable the bad person, so to speak. If it works, it can get somebody wrapped on the knuckles to some degree or another for the bad thing that they did. What it can't do is deal with the consequences of their bad action.
Okay? And you think Secrets in Their Eyes demonstrates all this?
Yeah, very much so. You can't put people back together just by vengeance alone, not even by justice alone. Something larger has to come along to put people back together. And that, in fact, look, personally, I once covered a terrible case where a 14-year-old girl got raped. And I talked to her about this. I interviewed her, not as a 14-year-old, but as an 18-year-old years later. And I said to her, look, has anything allowed you to cope with this? And she said, yes, I can actually forgive this man. And I was stunned. I didn't know. I said, sorry, I'm not sure I really heard you. She said, I forgive him because Christ forgave me. And now I have the peace of my heart to forgive somebody else. I know what he died for me. And so I'm prepared to allow him. I'm hoping that he will actually save this man too.
Wow.
Yeah, I know. Now, this is the thing. Justice alone can only fill up the scales, so to speak, to make things equal. But repairing broken people, well, that's a work of the Spirit. God's
and all that's raised by this one movie. I've seen the original film El Secreto de sus Ojos, Mark. But
you'll
I'm now
be able to tell the difference between them because yours was in Spanish.
But I am keen now to see Secret in Their Eyes. It does star Julia Roberts and Nicole Kidman and a bloke whose name we find difficult to pronounce. It's showing all around the place and it is rated M.
Okay. Well, look, if you are into the big picture and you're starting to be attracted...
Sorry.
For those of you who are new to being into the big picture, you might not be aware that this is actually just the proverbial tip of the iceberg, the radio show. We've been going on for about 6 months now, and you'll find heaps more past programs, articles, videos, all sorts of things over at thebigpicturewebsite.com. Facebook, have a look for the Big Picture website page there on Facebook. And also, you've got an opportunity to contribute. If you'd like to give us something to put in the show, send it to tellthebigpicture@gmail.com. We'd love to hear your opinions. We'd like to measure them out and match them with our own.
But still to come on tonight's show, Lance Armstrong's spectacular rise and fall in the program, as well as a classic sporting movie to have the whole family cheering.
Welcome back. Lance Armstrong is one of the most famous sports people ever, undeniable. Once upon a time, that was because the American cyclist won the legendary Tour de France race seven times.
Seven times.
Including titles after coming back from recovering from cancer. Mm. Okay, but revelations of his drug use eventually turned Armstrong into a despised cheat. Ben Seen The Program, the first feature film about Armstrong's spectacular rise and fall. And what it presents about all of that might not be as interesting as what it reveals about the way we approach forgiveness.
Inside each and every one of us is something more potent, more powerful than any drug. It's called the will to survive.
What does it take for you to race?
I just love to ride my bike.
No longer confined to Earth, now we had learned to fly.
He's a man transformed. He's recovered from cancer and turned into bloody Superman.
Why are you so obsessed with this?
Why are you not obsessed with this? He wins and wins and he celebrates. He meets the president. He gets more sponsors, more money, more fame. The man is a cheat.
The Lance Armstrong story is kind of well known now. Like, there's been great documentaries and exposés.
Yes.
How right does The Program get it?
Pretty right. It definitely doesn't kind of go against the grain of all the other things we've come to learn about Lance Armstrong in the last couple
doesn't
of years.
Doesn't say that there were aliens there. It didn't
turn out all to be a dream either. Okay. This is based on the book by an Irish journalist called David Walsh, who was a cycling journalist who followed Lance Armstrong and the Tour de France and world cycling for a long time. And he, as the movie would demonstrate, crusaded effectively against Lance Armstrong. He was convinced there had to be something going on with Lance Armstrong for him to be able to win in the ways that he won over the course of his career. He's played on screen by Chris O'Dowd, who's usually best known for comic roles, like in The IT Crowd and Bridesmaids, those kind of things. He does a pretty good job here as this crusading journalist. And Ben Foster is an actor. He's one of those guys that you would have seen his face, you'd recognize him, but you might not know the movies he was in. He plays Lance Armstrong, throws himself into it, like loads of commitment. He really, like, he looks the part. And The Program isn't the kind of sports movie that you might expect. And maybe if you thought about it, you would, because Lance Armstrong, usually a sports movie, you get the rise to the big championship, or you get this, like, it's meant to be triumphant. You're meant to be, you know, punching the air. About,
like a Rocky.
You love this sporting hero, but obviously we're watching a guy who we know goes up and then it goes down. I was just a little bit off-put all the way through the film. I didn't like the way the tone of it, and I didn't like the way it was trying to make the way I felt it was trying to make me feel. This will just be an allegation on my part, because I don't know if this is the intention of the director, Stephen Frears, or David Walsh, who wrote the book and contributed to the screenplay. But what the film left me feeling was that I'm watching a witch hunt. And everyone knows what happens to Lance Armstrong in the end. And also, if you've seen...
So we're not trying to excuse him, but you're trying to say they went over the top?
I think so, yeah. So you've seen enough footage. I think most people have seen Lance Armstrong, and he does come off as a bit of a jerk. And I think to be able to have lived the lie that he did for such a long period of time in the way that he did, with the extravagance that he did, it makes sense to present him on screen as effectively a villain and a guy who's really one-dimensional. He's just all on about winning at any cost, and he seems to have no soul, no anything. But he is so one-dimensional all the way through the movie, and everyone else actually seems to have a few different shades to them. There's a little bit of explanation about team members that get involved with performance-enhancing drugs or other people around the edges. Lance Armstrong, though, it just feels like all the way through that this movie is wanting me to revel in what we know is going to come, which is his downfall. And he's asking for it. He's begging for it. He is such a jerk all the way through. And particularly when you come to things like his campaigning for cancer research and his involvement with people who are suffering cancer and the way he destroyed so many people's dreams because it was this hero in front of them. I get all of that. I understand that. There's something about that that distanced me from what I was watching, that stopped me remembering effectively this is a real story and this is a real person, and made me just feel a little bit icky about the... I had more sympathy for Lance Armstrong by the end of this movie than I did going in.
But listen, don't you think that's a fairly typical human perspective, that there are some sins that are just basically unforgivable? I mean, this guy, you know, got his photo taken next to kids dying of cancer about how he was doing everything for them, but really he was in it for himself. Is there such a thing as an unforgivable sin? And does this film say basically Lance committed it?
I think to some degree, maybe this is the uncomfortableness that I had with the film, is that it felt like that's what it's telling me. It did feel like it's saying some people are beyond forgiveness and shouldn't be afforded that. And so I think the film is tapping into something that deep down a lot of us, I'll speak for myself, like there's plenty of things and situations either in my own life or you look around the world and you just think you could not possibly forgive that. Whether you're a Christian or you're not a Christian, you just think about the different scenarios that go along around in the world, let alone someone like Lance Armstrong, who, let's face it, like the guy lied to the world in such an extreme way and crushed so many people's dreams. And he didn't just lie about it. He held on to the lie, and even beyond the lie, he kind of kept going with it. So is someone like that unable to be afforded forgiveness? I think the program is effectively telling me yes, but the Bible tells me something completely different. Jesus tells me something completely different. You think about the Lord's Prayer, that one of the most famous prayers ever that Jesus gave to the world. And in that, he talks about how we should forgive people because God has forgiven us. You mentioned this a little bit in The Secret in Their Eyes, and I think this comes up in the program, or at least as I'm watching the program, is that if you think about forgiveness and you understand what God has done for us in forgiving us for all the terrible things we've done, like let alone Lance Armstrong, all the terrible things I've done, if I can get that in my head, I could surely forgive other people. There is nothing that I cannot forgive, as difficult as that is. As difficult, and someone like Lance Armstrong, if he crushed your dreams in person, it would be so hard to forgive that man. I understand that. But watching a movie like The Program, as solid and as well performed, as well scripted as it was, it left me feeling this uncomfortable sense of, you are suggesting to me there is not forgiveness for certain types of people. Yeah. And I want to say that Jesus does not stand up for that. And I don't either.
We've got to live in a world where we can forgive if we want to be forgiven.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Well, look, The Program stars Ben Foster, Chris O'Dowd, and a cameo by Dustin Hoffman.
He's really good in it.
Great. Okay. It's showing at cinemas everywhere from November 26th.
Oh, that's next week. Yeah. So we just want to get a jump on this. That's how we are at the big picture.
Yeah.
Mark,
well, it's coming up. Have a look for it. And rated M, though, for mature themes and coarse language. And actually, if you're more interested in The Program, you'll find out a few more details. I'll have a bit more of a think about it. The November edition of Eternity actually has Ben's review in it. So you can actually check that out on a pew near you.
The Program is certainly not a sports movie that aims to inspire audiences with the example set by its star athlete. Not at all. But that's normally the final score of where we end up with all sports movies. Most of them want us cheering loud for the training, the tears, the triumph that's on show. Well, for this week's expedition into what we like to call the vault, which is that vast playing field that we all know as movie history, we sent off our regular reviewer, Toya Gattas, who's from Insight's website, to return with a sports movie that does all those things that a sports movie is expected to do. And the winner is...
I picked my longtime favourite, Remember the Titans.
Oh, that Denzel Washington movie from how many years ago?
It's a while ago now, but it's based in 1971, and it's a true story as well.
Oh, that's right. Now, for anyone who hasn't seen this movie, explain to us what goes on in Remember the Titans.
So it's a true story about a high school football team that was forced to integrate both black and white players in Alexandria, Virginia. So T.C. Williams High School was created. It was the first ever black and white high school in the district. The football team, though, which was named the Titans, of course, they end up becoming this pillar of hope and acceptance for the Alexandria community. And right, they go on to win the championship cup. Yay!
Oh, and that's not a spoiler, because go away and look for the true story and you'll find out that's what happened. Who does Denzel Washington play?
Denzel Washington played Herman Boone. He is the coach of that football team.
Okay, now explain to us why this is such a favorite. Are you a person who loves sports movies?
I'm actually not a massive fan of sports movies, but Remember the Titans is just this movie that I must have watched it at least 10 times. Whenever it comes on free-to-air TV, I will just always be like,
Oh yeah, it's one of those movies.
So I'll always sit down and rewatch it. And one of the reasons is because, of course, it has Denzel in it. He is absolutely fantastic in this movie. Well, another reason, it's also a true story. So that's always a bit emotional. You're like, oh my gosh, this really happened. And it touches on such really deep and emotional issues that happened at that time about race, angst between black and white, the hatred. And it takes those really deep, really emotive issues and frames it in this backdrop with sport and high school kids. And it makes it even more understanding for the layperson to kind of relate to that time. And it kind of really opens your eyes at what really happened back then.
So we asked you to go away, Toya, and find a sports movie, and particularly one that was on about the training and the tears and the triumph. Now, Remember the Titans has all that stuff, doesn't it?
It does, but it's not too much of that.
So it's like a sports movie, but not a sports movie?
Yes, that's the best way to explain it. It's like a sports movie, but not, because if it was a sports movie, I really wouldn't like it.
But it is one of those movies, and there's a number of them from the States, everything from Friday Night Lights to Any Given Sunday, where that present American football gridiron in such a way that you can actually watch it even if you don't like it. And Remember the Titans is one of those movies. But to go back to this, I love this idea of a sports movie that's not a sports movie and that you've selected it for The Vault as this recommendation for everyone to go out and check out this terrific film. What is it that stays with you? You said that you've watched this film maybe more than 10 times. Amongst all the stuff happening on the field and off the field, Remember the Titans, what sticks out for you?
What sticks out for me most is this message of not looking at how people look and what they are on the surface, but looking through into their soul, and their soul as a human being, and how they are on the inside, the beautiful person that they are on the inside. And I think that the most powerful and emotive message of the movie, and I'm always left feeling a bit emotional, feeling a bit warm and fuzzy inside after the Remember the Titans, because it just has such this powerful, positive message that you just can't escape from.
Thank you very much, Toya, for coming back from the vault with a sporting movie that does all the things that we asked for you for it to do. Remember the Titans, nice choice. Insights magazine and website, big supporter of the Big Picture Show. Go to insights.uca.org.au and you can find some of Toya's reviews, including one of her latest, which is on the film that Mark talked about on the show recently. So go back to Big Picture website, find his review, and then compare it with what you see with Toya's review of Believe Me, a Christian movie, which, if you can believe all of us, is actually really good. Yes, and Toya agrees.
Compare them on screens right next to each other. Coming up on the show still, we have the top five sports Hollywood convinced me to try, but probably shouldn't have done so.
Welcome back. Now, Mark, we're almost at the end of the show, but we're up to a cracking part of the show. We're up to soundtrack.
Which is something you always got to wait for.
Mate, I'm so fired up for this. It's almost ridiculous. I almost can't put into words because in keeping
with... He's literally vibrating in his seat.
Mate, because in the last couple of segments, we've been talking about sporting movies of varying shapes and sizes.
Sure.
And I thought, well, what song could we play from a sport movie? But it's not Eye of the Tiger from Rocky.
There's another one?
Mate, there is another one. Try to be best, cause you're only a man, and a man's got to learn to take it. Try to believe, though the going gets rough, that you gotta hang tough to make it. History repeats itself, try and you succeed. Never doubt that you're the one, and you can have your dream. You're the best around, nothing's gonna ever keep you down. You're the best around, and nothing's gonna ever keep you down.
your life would depend on the strength that you have inside you. I gotta be proud, standing out in the crowd with the odds in the game by you. Try your best to win them all, and one day time will tell. When you're the one left standing there, you've reached the final bell. You're the best around. Nothing's gonna ever keep you down. You're the best around. Nothing's gonna ever keep you down. You're the best around. Nothing's gonna ever keep you
Mike, in case you couldn't pick it, that obviously it was You're the Best from Karate Kid, the finale, the final scene of the Karate Kid, and that was performed by the great Joe Esposito, who's never been heard of again, but that was You're the Best.
The chorus, did you get the chorus? You're the best around.
Yeah, you're the best in immediate proximity.
Yeah,
that
you're
we can,
the best.
You're the best nearby.
Of these five people I've seen, you're the best.
And the history of the song is a little bit similar. So Joe Esposito wrote this song with a guy called Giorgio Moroder, who was this disco pop electronica pioneer producer guy back in the 80s. And they were trying to get this song originally onto Rocky 3, but it got bumped for Eye of the Tiger.
It got knocked off.
Fair enough.
Eye of the Tiger came out.
Of course it did.
You can see that.
And then it tried to get on Flashdance soundtrack as well, bumped off that.
It got bumped from Flashdance.
But the director of Karate Kid, John Avildsen, liked the song so much, he thought, this has to be used in that final scene of the Karate Kid where Daniel-san does his crane move, You're the Best Around.
It should have been named You're the Third Best Around.
But of course, that's our soundtrack choice for this week.
Well, here we are with that moment long promised in this program where we start talking about the top five. And the top five this week is Sports Hollywood Convinced Me to Try. We've had a bit of a sporting flavor in the back half of the show. Well, these are sports Hollywood convinced me to try, but probably shouldn't. I think we've all been in that situation where we've all been sitting in a cinema and you've seen, like, you know, some clothes or a hairdo or something like that, or a snappy one-liner. And you go, I can do that. I can wear that. But picking up on our sporting theme, what happens when those filmic inspirations take truly tragic turns? Basically, what we end up with is My Life.
Five.
The first film that I really should not have paid attention to was The Italian Job. The 1969 or the 2003.
Oh, either
you
way.
Take your pick. It doesn't matter.
Any one of those?
It's basically more of a stand-in for all films that try and convince you that driving fast is cool and racy.
But it really looked cool in those movies.
Well, it looks cool right up until the point you take the car you've only owned for 15 minutes and go, I could go through there and spin fairly quickly, even though it was only 40 kilometres an hour.
Mate, you're a daredevil.
I did. I blew two tyres and bent the frame. All I did was just be in the moment for just one moment too long.
And what did you take your car back after 15 minutes?
Sorry, this one's broken. Can I have another one, please?
Four.
1992, there was a sporting film that came out that convinced me that I could do things that I really, probably can't. White men can't jump. So I went out there and I started my basketball career because I thought it was really cool. It looked great. It was fantastic.
It looked good when Wesley Snipes and Woody Harrelson were doing the street basketball up on screen.
The first thing I learned was, A, you don't stop a basketball with your face. That's just a really bad
That's
idea.
That's a rookie's mistake.
And then when you actually try and improve your game by putting your hand in front, the second thing I did was dislocate my finger. Like, I turned the whole thing backwards. Okay, so
I love tripping through your life, Mark, and just finding out more and more about you, particularly when you serve them up like this.
The Karate Kid in 1984 had a fairly tragic effect. Now, I was actually in a karate tournament.
Right.
I know, no kidding. And I was thinking, I could do the crane kick. That's what I could do at this point. So I put my hands up.
Can we just back up a little bit? Okay. Were you trained by Mr. Miyagi?
I wasn't.
No.
I wasn't, no.
So at any time during your training not by Mr. Miyagi, were you working on your crane
move?
We
were never actually taught the crane
move. No, you weren't. So the only thing that taught you the crane move was watching the Karate Kid. Am I understanding this correctly?
Let's be clear. I studied that scene carefully. I wasn't just
children. If you're listening
there,
at home, embrace movies and what they tell you, because I'm sure this is going to go well, Mark.
So
what happened to you?
I stood there in the dojo. There we were, and the fight was about to begin. And I put my hands up in the requisite position, you know, with the holster like near your ears,
just like Daniel-san did.
And I jumped. And I thought, I'm going to kick this guy right in the chest with my left foot. But halfway through, I thought to myself, no, he'll be expecting that.
Seen the Karate Kid as well. He knows what's coming next.
I threw my right foot up as well. But I didn't count on the fact that what I'd actually be doing then was be standing on nothing. So I was flying towards him with both feet, and he just stepped out of the way. And I continued on into the change room.
So rather than the crane move, it sounds like the lamest fly kick.
It was,
that's
in fact, more
happened.
Like the dead duck.
So you
move.
Weren't even the best around. You were,
I wasn't even around. I left the room. Two. Now you're gonna find it hard.
I'm laughing already.
You're gonna find it hard to understand. In 1995, I watched Clueless, and it had a profound.
And just for everyone at home who's never seen Clueless, not a sport movie.
It is, in
what
fact,
are you talking
a comedy
about?
Takeoff of Emma, but there's a character in it who skateboards, and he looked really, really cool.
They say were you older than you should have been?
A tad. I was 24. But anyway, I had some young mates at church. And they
some
said,
rad dudes?
They said, we'll take you skateboarding. So they took me up the top of the hill because we're going to do some hill skating. Now, everything's fine. Everything's hunky-dory, and you're in control at about 5 kilometers an hour. Okay? When you build to 10, you can still believe you're in control. Somewhere around 15, things get a little, I wonder, has anybody actually, you start to realize there are no brakes on this thing. When I got to about 25 kilometers an hour, which doesn't sound fast, but on a skateboard going down a hill, I then discovered something no one had told me about before. The death wobbles, which is something that causes your skateboard to flip up and down until literally it disappears. Suddenly, I'm actually going down the hill now at about 25 kilometers an hour, sans skateboard, head first towards the bitumen. Now, it's important to know at this point that I was working in television, okay? And so I was actually a television journalist, and I thought to myself, suddenly at that moment, as I'm flying towards the ground with my hands outspread at 25 kilometers an hour, I went, I've got to type on Monday morning.
Not so my precious mouse hands.
Yeah, so I threw my hands out of the way and hit with my face. That was the safe option.
One. Oh, get to the bit.
Who could forget 1991 and the arrival of that phenomenal film, Point Break?
I have not. There were so many extreme sports in Point Break, that movie with Keanu Reeves and Patrick Swayze. Which one did you pick?
I took surfing.
Of course you did.
Keanu Reeves could surf.
Tell us all about it.
It was the source.
But
why,
whoa, dude, he could surf. What about you?
I could. It literally only took me 3 years to learn how to stand up.
3 years of watching Point Break?
No, 3 years. I watched it once. Come on, I'm not an idiot. I got out there.
Dude.
I got my board. I paddled out every morning. I realized that paddling out in the dark in good and bad waves was character developing. It took a very long time getting smashed by waves.
Yeah, smashed.
But what I did actually manage was something quite unusual. I managed to suck other people into my tomfoolery. What I did, because I was married and happy at the time, I decided that everybody...
And you're still married and happy at this time?
Everybody would have their life improved by surfing.
Yes.
So I said to my wife, we're going on a trip. And I said, you're going to learn to surf. And I took her to Bell's Beach. Okay.
The finale of Point Break.
And we paddled out, or more to the point, I dragged my wife out into Bell's Beach waves. And despite what she says about what happened afterwards, I believe we had a fantastic time. Though, of course, the closing scene of that particular day in our life was very much like the closing scene of Point Break.
So, you still haven't figured out what riding waves is all about, have you?
It's a state of mind. It's that place where you lose yourself and you find yourself.
You don't know it yet, but you got it. It's right there. I saw you with those guys. You're a pit bull. You didn't hesitate, and they didn't back you down an inch. And that is very rare in this world.
Well, thanks for stepping in.
I've got to say,
dude, great top five list.
I know. Actually, recently I got a mate to sit down and watch that film with me again, and then realized it wasn't as good as I remembered.
Really?
It's not really life transforming. I didn't really want to get up and grab my board.
Oh, and he didn't either, particularly after the stories that I could have given it away. Maybe he's waiting for the remake that's coming out in January next year. I'm kind of keen,
Speaking of coming out, next week, we're going to do Katniss, The Capital, and Us. The finale to the Hunger Games film franchise lands. Is it worthy of a conclusive time? Who knows?
We'll find out. We're also going to look into losing your house and your moral compass in a new film, 99 Homes.
And the return of a monstrous place for kids to stay in Hotel Transylvania 2. Should you let them check in?
We'll let you know next week. Goodbye, sports. I'm still Ben McKechnie.
And I'm still Mark Hadley. See you next week.
The Big Picture is a Bible Society Australia production, sharing the light of God's word into every corner of your world.